Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:54 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is November 11th, and 2019. And when we think about what's going on in the markets right now, there's a little bit of indecision, and we have short-term overbought conditions. Tesla is a very good example of that. The share has done very impressively over the course of the last 4 or 5 months. Or let's just call that 6 months. You had an upside key reversal at the end of May, and now it is coming back up to test the upper side of that overhead trading range, which has been encountering resistance around the $400 level for much of the last couple of years. Tesla has got one primary advantage relative to just about every other automotive manufacturer, and that is that it already has a secure supply of batteries for its cars. And it doesn't have the same legacy of massive sunk capital in the internal combustion engine that other companies have. Then, of course, it is a further example of how new technologies allow the barrier to entry for what was previously a highly protected industry to literally disappear. The number of components in an electric vehicle is considerably less. One of the biggest challenges for the electric vehicle sector over the course of the last decade has been the depreciation rate of some of those early vehicles, like the Nissan Leaf. Those cars from 2012, 2011 are virtually worthless because their battery erodes so quickly, so they can't keep the charge, and then they run down even faster than they would have when they were new. With the newest round of batteries, particularly those that came out in the Model 3 for Tesla, they have 8-to-1-to-1 battery ratios, which is nickel to cobalt to manganese. So there is a lot more nickel in those batteries, and they can hold a charge for considerably longer. There are already instances of these cars running for 500,000 miles and losing only perhaps 1 or 2% of their charge potential over the course of all that driving. In that time, then, the maintenance costs have also been considerably less, so that you get range, you get durability, and then you also get the lower fuel and lower maintenance costs. And that represents a very powerful value proposition for consumers. The question is, how can we get it to a situation where people can afford those cars? And that is what the Model 3 has got ambitions for. Personally, I think I look at the mock-ups of the Tesla pickup truck, and I find it incredibly attractive. I've never wanted a pickup truck in my life before, but I could see myself driving one of those. Of course, I would really like to see a tradesperson talk about the durability of an aluminium vehicle when you've got to be lugging around heavy pieces of equipment, which is generally what people with pickup trucks require. But what it does suggest is the company is capable of competing. Then there is a clear risk of consolidation in the automotive sector. That's particularly true of some of the weaker components of it. So we've got Fiat, Chrysler, Peugeot looking to merge with one another. That is certainly one way to try and address the challenge that they have in front of them. Then, of course, you've got Volkswagen, which has been through an incredibly painful period, but the share is doing better, and it has broken up and out of what is effectively a 12-month range, and it is increasingly close to having doubled off the lows that were put in immediately after the diesel cheating scandal. Ford has also been talking about an electric SUV, and the share could potentially be putting in a higher reaction low in here. It would be a lot more comforting if it could break the sequence of lower rally highs, I suspect. So what we are starting to see is a little bit of differentiation coming through, and certainly the potential that we are moving towards a very different environment. What I find also particularly interesting is when you look at CLOs, you look at the high yield sector and the increasing potential that the next subprime problem is going to be in the automotive sector. A number of those conventional companies have been raising prices for a while into falling demand. And that is not the kind of situation that is sustainable beyond the short term. All the various toys and gadgets that they can peg onto the price of a new vehicle to improve the price for themselves is completely irrelevant if they can't sell any cars. Well, what this also tells us is that this is a beaten down sector. We're starting to see just some evidence of support starting to come through. And I think it is accurate to describe the automotive sector as part of the industrials, and the industrials generally tend to be rather cyclical. This is the time when cyclicals should start to do better. When we look at the continuous commodity index, it was in negative territory in here today, but it is still back above the 400-point level, and it has broken the succession of lower rally highs. Now, the bigger question is, can it sustain it? And I think we will have an answer to that question probably by the end of this week. The copper price has also been a little bit weaker in here today. And I think part of the reason for that was the fact that the Hang Seng was cut off at the knees this morning. It was down almost 3%, failing in the region of the trend mean and suggesting that the short-term overbought condition is going to be further unwound. Now the bigger question is whether that low around 25,500 is going to hold. We saw a similar move on the H shares index, the China Enterprises in Hong Kong. And when we then think about the Shenzhen B shares, I do think that this is one of the more appropriate benchmarks for monitoring the outlook for China, simply because it doesn't have the same number of state-owned enterprises and there are no banks in it. And therefore, it is more representative of what the private sector, such as it is doing. And this index is not rallying. In fact, it is plumbing its depths. Now, it was off the lows in here today. It would be a lot more comforting if we were to see some upside follow through tomorrow, and I rate that as probably a 50-50. The renminbi is also trading back lower than 7, and I continue to think that China just does not want to see the renminbi trading stronger than that. I had dinner with some friends last night, and one of the points that really came out was that their business is in selling diamonds, and the Chinese consumer had been one of the biggest and most important sources of revenue over the last few years. What they are increasingly seeing is that Chinese consumers, they might have the cash back home, but they're having increasing difficulty getting it out in order to buy these luxury goods when they go abroad. They're even looking at paying in installments, even a 10-issue installment plan, because they just simply can't get the money out in sufficient volume to buy these high-priced items. Well, what that also tells us is that China is clamping down on the ability of its citizens to move money overseas. It is becoming progressively more difficult. That is obviously a direct response to the risk of capital flight, and that risk of capital flight is only going to increase the longer the renminbi remains weak and the longer we continue to see the economy is slowing down. And of course, it's slowing down against a background where food price inflation is trending higher. When we look at the domestic price of pigs, it has been rallying really pretty persistently for months now, and that is in direct response to the African swine flu. But What is less remarked on is the inflation that we're seeing in fruit. And I don't, well, there we are. We've got the China CPI in fruit. One of the most important things is that the Xinjiang region is one of the biggest bread baskets in the country. I'm rather hesitant to think that the price has come back down, and this to me suggests that there has been some manipulation of the data. But when you put a third of the population behind bars, then it's rather difficult to go out and harvest soft fruits or vegetables. And obviously, that contributes also to CPI inflation. Now, when we then think about what's going on in the Western world, well, the pound was in positive territory in here today and up almost a full cent on news that the Brexit Party is not going to contest Conservative-held seats and will concentrate more on trying to combat Labour. Well, that's good news for the Conservative Party. It increases the potential that there will be a single-party government. That is still, I think, up for grabs. Now, what we're definitely seeing here is that the pound has found support in the region of the trend mean. There is the potential that we could see it go back up towards the upper side of this range that's been evolving for the last 3 years. When we think about it versus the euro, well, we're not far off the upper side of its range. And it is now trading back above that 115 area. The bigger point, though, is that the Conservatives and Labour are both liable to increase spending really quite considerably. We already have really very low interest rates in the UK. There is the scope that the new government is going to embark on a very significant fiscal stimulus to boost growth. That's unlikely to be particularly beneficial for the pound, so that is something that could inhibit potential for additional upside, except for the fact that the euro is so weak that there is still potential for the pound to rally even when supply of the currency increases. But what it is likely to be quite beneficial for is the stock market, and the FTSE 250 continues to stabilize from around this 20,000 level. Now, when we look at what's going on in the USA, well, the Russell 2000 is right in the region of this 1600 point level, and its return to outperformance and its ability to break up and out of this range has pretty much been the missing ingredient in terms of the ability of the wider US markets to really confirm that we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. I suspect that if the Russell 2000 can break higher, then the transportation index will be able to sustain its move up above this 11,000 level. The Dow Jones Industrial Average reversed a 100-point decline earlier on today to finish in positive territory, and it has already broken on the upside. If we get the transportation index also pushing on to new high ground, well, then that will be a Dow theory buy signal. I do think that it is quite likely that we're going to see that. The Nasdaq 100 has also continued to hold this move above the 8,000 level. And the banking sector is also continuing to benefit from somewhat higher yields. And there is a short-term overbought condition. And we've seen short-term overbought conditions occur in a substantial number of markets, not only in the USA, but also in Japan. So I think we have to at least consider that there is scope for some consolidation. The Nikkei was down about 60 in here today, but it is up almost 1,000 points over the course of the last 3 weeks. So I think there is certainly scope for some consolidation around this 24,000 level. If the consolidation is relatively minor, then that would put the support in probably necessary to support a significant move on the upside and above the 24,000 point level. The second section index is classically a lead indicator, and it has clearly broken its downtrend. It is now back above the trend mean. It does tend to rally in a rather monochromatic way that you can see on the periods when it rallies, that it does so just week after week after week, and then those moves are pegged back by clear downward dynamics. So there is the potential that it could just keep going higher from here. As long as it is doing that, then that is beneficial for the Japanese market. Then when we think about the Topix Banks Index, it has also broken its downtrend. It's back above the trend mean, so that is rather positive. And the Eurostox Banks Index has also broken its downtrend. In Spain, the socialists won the election, but they don't have enough of votes to form a government, whereas the far-right party doubled its representation. So that is a further example of political polarization continuing to represent a factor in elections. The IBEX index, though, is at least steadying from the region of that 8,500 point level and is potentially in the process of breaking its sequence of lower rally highs. The Italian market has been ranging mostly below 24,000 for nearly a decade, and it is racing to get back up towards that level. Certainly it would be ideal if we got some mild consolidation, which would allow this overbought condition to be unwound. As long as it's relatively minor, then that does hold out the prospect that we're going to see the Italian market breaking on the upside. The Greek economy looks like it is now back in contraction mode, and that may weigh on the stock market. There's certainly been a loss of momentum evident over the course of the last 4 or 5 months, and that sequence of higher reaction lows certainly needs to continue to hold. What's also, I think, rather interesting is that Irish exports have been contracting. Now, the stock market continues to push on the upside. It's been ranging now for the better part of 4 years. That range is obviously substantially above where the market bottomed in 2009, but 10,000 was the ultimate peak. There is certainly scope for additional upside. The fact that the Irish market, with its export focus, bears a very strong resemblance to the range that we've seen on the Eurostox index, which is just the Euro shares, is, I think, worth considering as well. That the Eurostox is right in the region of the upper side of that range. Again, this is another index with a short-term overbought condition. And the Europe Stocks Index has pushed through that 400 level for really the first time since 2015. Wasn't quite able to hold it on that occasion, but it does look better supported on this occasion. And I think there is clear scope here for a push on the upside. It has been tempting to think about a bearish dollar argument, and that bearish dollar argument has been propounded for much of the last 18 months, and it has been stubbornly marching higher in a jerky manner. Well, it rallied on consecutive days last week and was a little bit softer in here today. And now the big question is whether that area around 97 is going to continue to hold. A sustained move below that level would really be required to confirm that we're back in a supply dominated environment. At the same time, there are some clear arguments for why the oil price should be rallying. There is a very large short position which suggests that the market is at risk of a short covering rally. Saudi Arabia has got a very clear interest in attempting to boost the price ahead of its IPO. and may be able to convince the other OPEC members to curtail their supply even further. But the reality is that the USA is still pumping at record high levels. There is plenty of supply about. There is the potential that we could see the price starting to firm further from here. But if it's going to do that, then it needs to at least sustain a move above the trend mean. And we just have not seen that just yet. There is a record cold spell sweeping through much of the USA right now, and that was a temporary boon for the natural gas price last week. But it was down in here today, and down in a pretty dynamic manner, suggesting that we could see at least a pullback towards the trend mean, but even potentially towards the lows put in October. The real fact here is that until quite recently, natural gas supply was and storage was significantly above the 5-year average. So it's not as if there's a shortage in this cold weather. There is plenty of natural gas to go around. One of the reasons why the Baltic Dry Index had been pushing on the upside was because of seasonal factors. I suspect that it was also because of some retooling heading into the ISO 2020 regulations coming into effect in January. But it was down in a dynamic manner over the course of the last week. If it's going to hold this more bullish environment, then it is going to find support this week, and that is really a necessary condition. Otherwise, there is the potential that it's going to go all the way back down and test the lower side of its range. I think when we think about the bond markets, we're in a situation at the moment where there is a great deal of liquidity sloshing around, and we are looking at a government that is spending well in excess of $1 trillion more than it takes in per annum in the teeth of a major expansion rather than a recession. So one would have to conclude that getting 1.94% on a 10-year horizon is not sufficiently large to really compensate one for the risk in the government bond markets. When we look at this longer term trend, well, it has been ranging already for the better part of 8 or 9 years. It's just bounced from the lower side of the range, and it's done so in a very dynamic manner. And that does suggest that the risk of pushing back up towards the upper side of the range, around 3%, is increasingly likely. And I think with that, when we think about the fact that oil prices have not been rallying, that the dollar is still reasonably firm, but that there is this outstanding risk in the bond markets, that suggests that what we're seeing in gold is really not much more than a consolidation. And when we think about what the risk is, well, the risk is that it can pull back in a sharper manner to unwind the overbought condition relative to the trend mean. The size of the pull of the advance from the initial breakout point was about 15%. When it broke out of its base all the way back in 2002, it rallied by about 18%, and it gave up the entire thing. There is the scope here that we could see it come back to the region of the trend mean, which currently coincides with the upper side of that base formation. Gold does tend to overshoot on both the upside and the downside, so it could pull back by more than that. But as long as it's holding the majority of the advance up from under $1,200, then I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the medium-term new bull market environment. And palladium prices do now look like they are going to unwind the overextension relative to the trend mean, or at least pull back to the upper side of the underlying range, which is around the $1,600 area. But the sharp pullback in here today, certainly broke the sequence of higher reaction lows. It is a larger reaction than we've seen since July, or really the beginning of August. And the last two significant downward dynamics that we've seen resulted in reversions to the mean. So I think the base case has to be that we are going to see some additional downside in palladium. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.